This is The Topic is Trek, episode 83, for Friday, January 15th, 2021. Coming up in this episode, we ponder a point about the Mirror Universe. Vulcan is open daily, just not every day. All about that season finale of Discovery, all that and more right now on The Topic is Trek. Same ship, different day. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, The Topic is Trek. Engage already. So I think that green ogre, that's not The Topic is Shrek. It's The Topic is Trek. Okay, got it. All right. All set now. I've been confused all these years. Makes sense now. Well, hello, I'm Clinton, one of your co-hosts on The Topic is Trek. And beaming in to join me, as always, first of all, is Mr. Craig Stepp.
Cowabunga.
Let's see. Nope. Still no good. Try again.
I'm sorry. That was what I was hoping that Burnham was going to say when in the captain's chair.
I see.
Fly, you fools.
Fly, you fools.
And that disembodied voice there joining us also is Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
How are you, everybody? It's good to be back.
And welcome to a brand new year.
Yes.
Yeah. See, different year, same.
Same ship.
Same, different.
Different day. Emphasize that P, ship, same ship, different day. Before we get started with anything else, I wanted to mention very briefly that there's an upcoming Fathom event. Of course, you know those take place in theaters. You remember mm-hmm. what a theater is, right?
Right.
Well, on February 2nd, there'll be a one-night-only showing of Woman in Motion, Nichelle Nichols, Star Trek, and the remaking of NASA.
Hmm.
So you can go to Fathom Events and get some information on that if you're inclined to go to a theater and check that out.
Actually, it's probably pretty safe to go to one. You'd probably be like one of the only people in the room. That's right.
For a private screening of Woman in Motion. Exactly.
That's about right.
All right. I wanted to make sure we mentioned that up front before we went on to other things, because a certain person might not really like the fact that we're doing subspace chatter. We're going to check with them right now. Hey, Charlie, we're going to do subspace chatter. You cool with that?
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
Absolutely not cool with it. Excellent. Great to see you holding up the same thing in 2021.
Yeah. At least he's consistent.
I have hopes that he will agree with us so I can get my 2021 prediction to come true.
Okay. Well, why don't you start us off in the thing that Charlie doesn't like, which is the first subspace chatter story.
Alrighty. We've just wrapped up 23 beautiful weeks of Star Trek. on CBS All Access. But now what? Why not try going old school with a fan film or two? First up, we have part one of a new production, The Romulan War. This 24-minute film takes actual Trek TV and film productions footage and combines it with a variety of elements such as actors shot against green screens, documentary-style motion graphics, and brand new special effects shots, supervised by Trek Yard's co-host Samuel Coggins. The production tells the first half of the story behind the legendary Earth-Romulan War. It's done in a style reminiscent of another fan production, Prelude to Axanar. The team behind the Romulan War is now raising funds for part two. There's also Pacific 201. That's the advanced course. Pacific 101 was your beginner intro to Pacific.
I did not know that.
Yeah. This two-part film tells the story of the Pacific, NCC 201. Ah, that's where the number comes from. and her encounter with both an unstoppable planet and a Romulan vessel. What do you get when an unstoppable planet meets a Romulan vessel?
Well, it's an unstable planet.
Actually. Oh, unstable.
Get a hard stop. Get a hard stop is what it is.
You get a misread script is what you get. Yeah. Both installments of this production are already available. We have links to all this in the show notes over at episode 83 at thetopicistrek.com.
So did either of you get a chance to check out either these films?
I did not, unfortunately. I was consumed by work the last 2.5 days.
Fair enough. They're interesting. I mean, typical fan film production values. I think that the Romulan War gets a bit of a boost by the fact that they are using some actual footage from movies and TV shows to kind of supplement some of what they're doing. But I was actually encouraged because I really thought that those rules that came down were going to put an end to fan films, that no one was going to be interested in doing them.
Right, right.
And both of these have come out fairly recently. Now, I think the Romulan War was in the planning stages for quite some time. I'm not sure about Pacific 201.
They were planning the Romulan War?
Well, they were planning the Romulan War itself. No, actually, they're planning the film about the Romulan War. Gotcha. I'm sure the Romulans were planning their war for a long time as well. But
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
Oh, go ahead.
But one of the limitations that the Paramount had put on everybody was the 15 minutes, or CBS, I guess, is the 15 minute rule, where they couldn't have a particular story any longer than 15 minutes. The first one here I'm looking at is 24 minutes.
Right. And the second one, I believe, runs a bit over it as well. So I'm not quite sure what's up with that. Again, because the lead time on some of this stuff is fairly long, I'm wondering if these were able to plead to be grandfathered in.
We started writing them 10 years ago. Does that count?
Which I think grandfathering is not a phrase I should be using anymore, but I don't remember what the current phrases for it.
So was that offensive to grandfathers everywhere?
Right.
Yeah. I'm only saying that I think there's a new word to use for that. So I'll use that for now.
Millennialism.
Basically just the fact that, you know, they've been working on them so long that hopefully they pleaded to the powers that be. Mm-hmm. We would just like to get these out the door.
Okay.
We'll find out. All right. Let's move on to our next story.
All right. Well, as you know by now, by revisiting the Mirror Universe, Emperor Giorgio altered the course of events in the Terran Empire. One of those changes was her death at the hands of Mirror Michael. I just want to say that, Mirror Michael, not Michael Burnham. Now people are asking the question, did that change allow Mirror Universe James T. Kirk to begin his rise to power?
Yes, he's now the Emperor.
Oh, spoiler alert.
Technically, wouldn't Giorgio be the Empress?
She was referred to as the Emperor. Okay. So she was the Emperor.
I think I've heard it both ways in the show. Anyway.
Continue
on. What?
Continue on, please.
Okay, I shall. An article on Screen Rant points out something that many of us had missed. Emperor Giorgio has a Tantalus field device on her quarters.
No, not on her quarters. That in would be really quarters. Weird. In her quarters.
Creepy. Yeah. Of course, the whole Tantalus thing is creepy anyway.
We see the Emperor using it to watch Michael Burnham in the Agonizer on it. He wanted to read on. In the Agonizer booth, Captain Killy. I think that's a typo there. Captain Killy. Oh, you had it right. I read it wrong.
I try so hard sometimes.
you only have so much to work with on this show.
We'll fix it in post. All right. Captain Killy also comments that the Emperor could end Burnham with just the touch of a button. It's a comment virtually identical to the one Marlena made to Kirk in the TOS episode, Mirror, Mirror. In the revised Terran Empire history, was Discovery defeated by the Enterprise, or spoils come claimed by evil Kirk? It is an interesting question to think about.
So I don't know. Did either of you notice that? I remember the scene, and when I looked at the shot, I said, I remember obviously seeing the shot, but I didn't notice that in addition to the image of Michael Burnham in the agonizer booth, next to it were a series of buttons, including that tear-shaped large one at the top.
Yeah.
They were all in the configuration of Kirk's Tantalus field device. Huh.
I didn't, I mean, now that I see the picture, of course, I'm like, oh yeah, I guess so. But I didn't think about it when I was watching it.
So
it was and a good that's the end of that discussion.
Yeah. And I don't know, because the article was raising questions about, well, is there only one of these devices? Because remember, it was developed by some unknown scientist on some unknown planet. It was a spoils. But, you know, if everybody had them, the mirror universe would be full of animals only. People would just wipe each other out constantly. But so does that mean this is the one and only, and somehow it got from the Discovery to the Enterprise? Maybe somebody looted the Discovery and then Kirk found it after that. I don't know. But I thought it was interesting to ponder.
It was a nice touch by the writers. Very well done.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a good question.
I thought that teardrop shaped thing was a Google pin saying, you live here.
Yeah, you're here. Yes.
Yeah. Michael Burnham is located here. Yes.
Yeah, she's all sharing she's sharing her location with Giorgio.
Oh, that's nice.
She doesn't have a choice.
That's right. Her location? Oh, she's in the agonizer booth. Okay.
Listen to the screams. You don't have to do anything else. All right, let's move on to the next story. Duke University biology professor and lifelong Star Trek fan Mohammed Noor became a science consultant for Star Trek Discovery back in May of 2019. Mm-hmm. But under the terms of his contract, he couldn't speak about his work on the series until the end of the season. And now, since that time is here, Professor Noor has started a YouTube miniseries called Biotechie with the Admiral, Science Lessons from Star Trek Discovery.
I think it's Biotrekkie.
What did I say? That's Techie? Oh, Biotrekkie, sorry.
Now we're all even.
Yeah, and I wrote it anyway.
See, well, speaking is not so easy, is it, Clinton?
Actually, the professor wrote it. I'm the one that's reading it. Anyway, the show delves into season 3 of Discovery and will deal with alien races, both old and new. But wait, you say, I get that Professor Noor is the Biotrekkie, but who is the Admiral? It's none other than Admiral Cornwell herself, Jayne Brooke. It seems that Noor and Brooke met at a panel at DragonCon 2019. A panel being conducted by Noor and friend of the show, Dr. Aaron McDonald.
I think we were at that panel.
I think we were.
Yeah, we were.
Jayne and Mohammed have been friends ever since. You see, besides Star Trek, both Brooke and Professor Noor have something else in common. Duke University. Brooke attended the school and was a biology major for, as she says, about a semester. Episode 1 of the Biotrekkie with the Admiral is out now. We have a link to it in the show notes for episode 83 over at thetopicistrek.com. It's interesting because the episode was not terribly long, and Dr. Noor spent time talking about Molly, the transworm, and about the biology of the transworm. So I think every episode's going to talk about different aspects of it. I mean, he mentioned the fact that it was great to see the familiar alien races, Morn's race and Dorians and so forth, but he really wanted to spend time talking about the transworm, and understandably so.
Hey, that was kind of interesting to see. Speaking of Morn, by the way, seeing him actually doing one of his race actually doing something other than sitting at a bar.
Running around, doing things. Still as talkative as ever, of course. But
Man, he'll talk your ear off if you let him.
I wish they would have opened his mouth like he was going to say something and just stopped.
They have. There was a point in DS9 where he goes, never mind. It was shut down. I think that was just a running gag on the writers.
Oh, yeah.
All right. And in Vulcan, Alberta, Canada news. A sad sign of current times. The Vulcan Town Council has decided that it will shift the Vulcan Tourism and Trek Welcome Center from a year-round operational schedule to a six-month calendar, April 1st to September 30th. It seems the bulk of tourism to Vulcan, usually they visit in those 6 months. So town administrator Kim Fath explained, it's always going to be easier for us staffing-wise to expand the hours out than it is will be to cut them out down again. Cutting us down to this cost us 2 staff members, and it was quite the process to do this. She went on to state there is a possibility the center will reopen more dates, expanding to 9 months somewhere down the line. But since the center staff is responsible for organizing the annual Vulcan convention, the council made the difficult decision to cancel Vulcan, not just for 2021, but possibly permanently.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah, the annual event has a budget of around $35,000 Canadian. And to put that into some perspective, the most recent census figures we could find placed the town's population at around 2,000 people. So I think you can see...
Well, each of them ponied up 1,000.
Yeah, that's right. We got to go fund me.
We're raising your taxes.
This, however, does not mean an end to the Trek connection. Be assured of that. The town relies a great deal on tourism. So ideas for smaller themed events tied into Trek specific, we'll call them holidays, are being considered. And there's possibilities of having Trek guests for those events. We'll keep you posted on this. And we believe that Vulcan can pull through this. We're with you guys.
Can we speculate what some of those smaller specific holidays are? Is it going to be like Happy Ponfar or something?
Well, they talked about Spock Day.
Okay.
Which I'm assuming would be, I'm guessing that's, well, if that's Leonard's birthday, though, that's in March.
They open on April 1st, so they could get First Contact Day in there.
True. And, well, and they'd also be open for Star Trek Day, which is the 8th of September.
Yeah.
So they could
do
that. The
first day we saw a bathroom on Star Trek Day.
They're going to start making up Star Trek Hallmark holidays.
That's right.
The day we saw R2-D2 Day.
This is Plomeek Soup Harvesting.
The now Kelp Days. All right, now. We covered only a few stories this time around. We will confess because we have a lot to cover in this episode. But if you want more, we have links to 57 additional stories that we did not have time to cover. And you'll find everything from Dr. Aaron McDonald and Professor Mohammed Noor, remember them, explaining the science behind the burn. You can also find out why we won't be seeing much of Jet Reno in season 4 of Discovery. Ooh, want to know more about those things? Well, just go to the show notes for episode 83 over at thetopicistrek.com. And now comes the part of the show where we have to say, and I say it with pleasure, goodbye, Charlie.
I want to stay.
No.
out. Yeah. Like this. Out.
Now we have a special away team mission. As you recall, we've previously had Craig talk about some of the Star Trek comics.
Oh, yeah.
And he's going to tell us about another collection.
Are we? Oh, yes. That is me. So just kidding. So I read the Enterprise Experiment, Star Trek Year 4. Well, I think I said it backwards. Star Trek Year 4, The Enterprise Experiment. And it's a 5-issue series. It came out, I think, in 2008. And it was actually a lot of fun to read. I think I liked it a lot more than I did just the Star Trek Year 4 series that came out previously. And I'll give you a quick synopsis on each of the books. Where's the synopsis for the first one here? Say Kirk and Spock are in the, a sequel to the classic episode, The Enterprise Incident, originally written by DC Fontana herself, where Kirk and Spock find themselves trapped on an Enterprise out of phase with space itself and facing a plot of revenge from the Romulans. That's the first issue. The second one, number two, the untold fourth year of the Enterprise's legendary 5-year mission continues with the Enterprise is crippled and out of phase. It's This is a continuing story. So each
I was going to say, like, otherwise I've got two of the same story going on here. Okay.
No. So the same story carries over two issues, and then another story carries on about two more issues, and it kind of wraps up in the fifth one. So this one, with the Enterprise crippled and out of phase and a cloaking experiment gone haywire, a Romulan strike force storms the ship looking for revenge for their stolen technology. So Kirk and Spock must find a way to repel the invaders while at the same time reverse the experiment and restore the ship before it fades away completely.
So I have a question.
Yes.
When the Romulans come on board, is the first thing they do immediately access all Starfleet records via the computer?
Download the memory banks.
Yes. Yes.
We really need a password on that
thing. They do.
Yeah. Please enter, put your fingerprint here. All right. So issue number three, a mysterious discovery on Lorin 5 sets the stage for a conflict between Klingon Empire and the Federation, with the sudden absence of Organian intervention between the two powers, it could mean an all-out war. Now the crew of the Enterprise find themselves caught up in a race to discover the true nature of the secrets of Lorin 5, as well as why the Organians have disappeared. If you hadn't kind of guessed, one of the things in this issue is they found another obelisk, you know, like the ones from the Paradise Syndrome. And then in this issue, I love the cover because the cover has a Sulu dressed as a Klingon with a little bit of a goatee, you know, like the Klingons did back then. And he's punched Kirk, and Kirk's on the ground. So the Klingons have discovered what appears to be a preserver obelisk, but can the Enterprise prevent them from unlocking its secrets before it's too late? And then the fifth one, which is the one I had to share a picture with you two guys. It looks like Spock is jamming out at the DJ.
Yeah, that one took me by surprise.
I'm sorry. It just made me laugh at cover. So in the final chapter, the Enterprise experiment is a great discovery. A great discovery sends the crew to the Starship Enterprise on a mission to locate an ancient outpost before the Klingon fleet can seize its power for themselves. The answers Kirk and his crew have sought will finally come into focus as a long-lived mystery is revealed, and new alliances change the political landscape and cause ramifications long into the future.
Why do you think you liked, was there an overall tonal shift in these episodes?
Yeah, I've got some points that kind of talk about all of them, not really plot points, but I like that they incorporated a lot of continuity from the animated series. Like, we have Erickson here, and he played a big part, especially in the first two issues. He, as I mentioned, I think last time, he seemed like a very capable officer, and is it telepathy? He's got telepathy. I think they mentioned that in here too. I was like, wow, what does this guy not have? He's got three arms, three legs, and he's smart.
And he can whistle.
And he can whistle. Yeah, he can whistle. I think DC Fontana as a writer was fantastic with this. You know, she obviously knew the voices for a lot of these characters, especially in this issue, Spock. I think she kind of nailed his voice, and really him and Kirk, you know, anytime you read any of those lines, you could really visualize them and, actually saying those are the things that they would be saying. Spock's dialogue was good. The technological stuff, the invasion, all that works really well. About Eric's was awesome. I skipped ahead on my bullet point there. It was a great continuity between the two different distinct stories that lead into the fifth issue. So I enjoyed it a lot. You got any questions?
So they were expanding on stuff in the story. Like when we have the one with the obelisk.
Yes.
Are they making reference back to that episode, or they just say, oh, I remember seeing one of these before, and then.
Yeah.
Is there a a connection, an actual connection to be made between the two of them.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a reference between the last ones. Yes, that's right. I mean, what do you mean? Yeah, there was.
Okay. All right.
There was a little bit of flashback.
If it's too much of a plot point, I don't want to spoil
it. Yeah, no, I don't want to spoil it for anybody that wants to go read it. But yeah, there was some. Also, there was something I forgot. And maybe I just didn't realize this, or it's been so long since I thought about it. There was some a couple of flashback scenes, and Kirk was reflecting about his brother dying. And then there was also a part where McCoy, we had a conversation with his daughter. I was like, wait a minute. I don't remember. Maybe it's just me. I didn't remember he had a daughter. Did he?
That was one of the things that they were plotting to actually do in the fourth season. If Trek itself had gotten a fourth season, was to introduce McCoy's daughter.
Yeah. Cause he was talking about how he was mentioning that, obviously things didn't work out with, her mother or his wife, whatever you want to call it, look at it. But daughter had joined Starfleet, and she was also, in medical as well, which was kind of cool.
Left me nothing with nothing but my bones.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the one thing I did not like about the series so much is they focused a lot just on Kirk and Spock saving the day, which, you know, there's more than just Kirk and Spock here.
Yes.
Eric's did his part, but I always thought things work better when there is a, you know, there's a Kirk, McCoy and Spock kind of triangle on a lot of these stories, at least to some degree. It doesn't have to be all three of them all the time, but, you know, at least an angle there. But, yeah. But other than that, they did a great job. Got to see Kor, you know, come back, and he was trying to settle things with Kirk. Trying to think of some other stuff here. Yeah, let's see. I was looking at my notes. Yeah, we got to see Kor, his Klingon crew. Yeah, they even wrote those pretty good. I could totally read those and think of the original actor to play Kor.
William Campbell?
Is that it? I was racking my brain trying to remember.
Same guy who did Trelane?
Yeah. Yeah. And when Sarek was in there, got him in there for a little bit.
Or am I thinking of Kang?
Anyway, I'm being a little bit vague because I don't want to give the whole story away because it's only five issues, but it's good. It's good. I enjoyed it. So I'm gonna try and read Star Trek Year 5. It's going to take me a little bit because that is a 21 issue run. So it actually ran for almost two years. Maybe I'll do some issues and then mix it up a little bit.
Yeah. See if it breaks up into sections to make sense.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So once again, it's out in book form at this point, or would you read it online, or how did you?
You can get it online. As a matter of fact, if you go sign up for Comixology through Amazon, which is like $6 a month, you can just pay the $6, you know, and then cancel it. And then if you read them in a month, they've got a lot of Star Trek stuff in there. They don't have for year five, they don't have all 21, but they got a lot of them that you can read as part of the unlimited thing. So, but all of these, I believe, are on the unlimited plan. So if you pay the $6, you can read them all, or you can buy them through Kindle or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. And we do not have an affiliate link because we're not an affiliate. So you'll just go search for
Star Trek. Hold on just a minute. I'll get you an affiliate link, right?
No. At Star Trek Year 4, The Enterprise Experiment.
Before you write in, I was mistaken. William Campbell did not play Kor. He played Koloff.
Is that John Kalikas?
I believe you're right on that one. I get the three actors mixed up with the three roles. Kang, Koloff, and Kor.
Yes.
And Dax.
What? Oh, that's, yes. But that's from a specific episode. So, yes. All right. We're back from our away team. As soon as we get the shuttle back. Oh, there's Craig. He's crashing the shuttle into the bay right now. All right. Wonderful. And time to go out on our main mission. And this week, we're talking about the final three episodes of season 3 of Star Trek Discovery, specifically Sukal, There Is a Tide, and That Hope Is You, part two. And Craig is going to start us off with our recap of what happened. So spoiler alert, and here we go.
All right.
Do we need the spoiler sound?
Huh?
Sure. Give us a chime. Spoiler alert. Ooh, all the things.
Where's the black alert? We're going to talk about Discovery.
Black alert.
There we go.
All right. Not too much because we'll get sued. So as the three episodes begin, Gray Tall reappears. He is upset that he can't interact with the real world and clearly hiding from the one person who can see him is a perfect way to deal with that, of course. The crew learns that someone is alive on the Kelpian ship that is inside the Verbian Nebula. Saru, in a classic soap opera style, lets everybody know that he could tell the Kelpian doctor on the Kieth. Is that how you say it?
I can't remember. Yes.
Kieth. I nailed it. He could tell that the doctor on the Kieth was pregnant. It's actually the doctor's child that is alive on the board of the ship. Dun, dun, dun.
125 years later, we're just going to let that one go. So Discovery tries to enter the nebula, but radiation and turbulence break down the ship's shields. I can't hold her together, Captain. Book says, pull me in, coach. He flies his ship in and finds the wreckage. He finds that the wreckage has a breathable atmosphere. How fortunate. And the ship is on a planet loaded with dilithium. What a stroke of good luck. Well, Saru leaves Tilly in charge because that's who you do. You find your ensign. No, anyway. So you can tell I had a little bit of skepticism on some of these shows. So that he, Culber, and Burnham can beam down to investigate. Burnham reassures Tilly that everything will be fine. You just look for that little burr on the captain's chair and you rub it like a worry stone. Only it's already been worn down, and that should take any care of any problems. That and some good herbal tea before bed. Okay, bye. The away team ends up inside a huge holographic environment. Burnham looks like a Trill. Culber looks like a Bajoran. And Doug Jones doesn't have to put any makeup on. He's human. How fortunate. He probably got to work that day and went, sweet.
Yeah, he was good for like almost two episodes, the whole
thing. That's right. Well, meanwhile, back in space, Osiris' ship shows up. So Discovery cloaks. By the way, did we mention that Discovery can now cloak? Anyway, then Captain Tilly presses real hard on that chair design flaw and is able to give as good as she gets in a battle of words with the Emerald Chain leader. Back to that holographic environment on the crashed Kelpian ship. Although all the grown-ups eventually died from radiation, Dr. Issa was able to create a holographic world for her son, Sukal, within the Kieth. That way, Sukal could survive and learn while waiting to be rescued, which was probably only going to take like a couple of years.
COVID-19, it'll be over in a few weeks.
No problem. Yeah. Now, warning, we have technobabble ahead. What Dr. Issa did not anticipate was the effect the radiation in the nebula and the huge deposits of dilithium on the planet would have on her son. Culber speculates that Sukal's chromosomal separation was disrupted in utero. It causes genes to be affected by the environment. The genes mutated to interact with the dilithium in unique ways. Unfortunately, one of those effects was catastrophic. While Sukal witnessed the death of his irradiated mother, yikes, he let out a yell, understandably so, that traveled at the resonant frequency of dilithium subspace components. That's right. Sukal caused the burn.
Oh, I thought it was that little guy inside of the land of the Who that Horton found when he let out.
Not the little flower. No.
I thought it was the super hot wings I had at the.
Well, that's another that caused the burn. Of course, that's
Johnny Cash caused the burn.
Ring of fire.
And let's get some preparation aids. I'll take care of that. We're gonna keep going. When Sukal gets mildly upset again, it causes a disruption that destabilizes Discovery's dilithium and decloaks the ship. Osiris regulators beam in and put a mind control device on Stamets.
And by this point, Book has used this ship to return to the planet, and Adira stowed away on board to bring radiation medicine, medic, medicine. I was going to say medication. To the Waze team. To Waze team? The away team.
Work with it.
Yeah. Waze, as in Google. Anyway.
No.
So now he is returning to Discovery with Burnham. They arrive just in time to see the hypnotized Stamets spool up the spore drive and whisk away Discovery and the Viridian.
Bye-bye.
But Stamets ends up having a pleasant conversation with Aurelio about opera stuff. He seems like a really nice guy.
Oh.
Osira heads directly to Starfleet Federation headquarters and tricks her way inside. So clearly she put a flaming bag, you know, of stuff in the front
ding
door.
Dong ditch.
I didn't know that. They open the door. What?
Oh,
yeah. Osira. So clearly she's going to wreak havoc, right? Wrong. She actually just wants to talk. Oh, about an alliance with the Rimmel chain and the Federation.
Just wants to chat.
And Vance is the only person who ever read the entire contract, his terms right. and conditions.
That's right.
And when Sukal was introduced as Sukal, this is Michael Burnham. He said, Burnham, okay.
We're here all week, people.
All righty. On with the story. Admiral Vance sits down with her to find out, hey, what's up? Of course. He also has a lie detector hologram with him just in case. But Osira is speaking the truth. Vance turns from doubter to believer and wants this to work. But, like consumed replicator fruit, things begin to break down quickly. Oh, yeah, that discussion about the apple was nice. Osira leaves, angry, her hopes dashed, and she returns to Discovery. Fortunately, Book and Burnham have already re-entered Discovery. Burnham goes off to try to retake the ship by reenacting scenes from Die Hard. Book is unfortunately captured, so that didn't go so well. Grudge is safely hidden on Book's ship, hopefully with lots of catnip. I mean, things are getting stressful. In order to stop Osira from utilizing the spore drive, Burnham removes Stamets from the ship. That was nice. Just out you go. Stamets is not at all happy about it, since he's the only way the ship can get back to the nebula in time to save Culbert, Saru, and Tall. Looks like Burnham is on the outs with Paul.
Oh, that's my cue. Osira easily escapes from Starfleet because Burnham makes a promise to Vance. You know, those two are going to become besties at some point.
Oh, yeah, you can tell. You can tell.
Love so you. At some point, there's a big fight on and in and around the turbo shafts. And by shafts, we mean unexplainable infinite expanse. Inside.
Yeah, what was up with that? We'll talk more about
that
later.
We'll talk about that, most certainly.
Yeah, it's like the TARDIS. Anyway, Tilly,
Owasakun.
Yeah. Yes, thank you. Bryce and Detmer and the rest of the bridge crew end up trapped in a rather large section of the ship because this ship has tons of space.
Oh, yeah.
I lost my spot. Hold on.
She plans to bleed out her oxygen. Their oxygen.
Oh, there it is. And where Asara plans to bleed out their oxygen. Thank you, Chuck. Slowly, no, really, it's really, really slowly. You have to, if you have a faster leak, if you jab the sewing needle in a good year,
it was really slow, really slow.
It was really slow. Still, it gives
Owasakun,
and the spear data hidden inside one of the DOT 23s a chance to share a moment. As the lieutenant uses an incendiary device to destabilize the superconductors that holding the nacelles in place, knocking the ship out of warp. Of course, 10 seconds later, the Viridian scoops up the Discovery, but still, cool to see the inside of the Discovery nacelle. Did we mention that she killed the Andorian Wren? Wah, wah. And choked her friend Aurelio? Wah, wah. She's not making any friends today.
No, absolutely not. She's just having a bad day. Well, trapped inside the Viridian, Burnham suggests a tactic straight out of the Trek playbook. Eject the warp core.
And a double fist punch whenever you can.
Absolutely. The good news is we finally get to see the warp core. as it falls through a tube the length of the Empire State Building.
And twice the size of the warp core itself, so it's rattling around inside. Boom, 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 boom.
And as luck would have it, Aurelio has figured out that Book can operate the spore drive. They get out just in time. And I don't think that the Voyager gets destroyed, so we're good there too. Discovery returns to the Dilithium planet and rescues Culber. We're going to skip the whole battle where Osira dies, basically. We're just going to skip that part. Adiratal and Sukala rescued, and Graytal, who's been seen by all of them while the holographic program was running, once again fades away for now. Once back at Starfleet Command, Burnham runs into Sahil, the guy who was who single-handedly manned that Federation relay station in episode 1 of season 3. Yay, he's finally lieutenant now. Then Admiral Vance offers Burnham the captaincy of Discovery, and she accepts. Yay!
And there was much rejoicing.
Yes. And she had the catchphrase that would make Saru jealous. Had Saru not taken a leave of absence to return to Kaminar with Sokol. That's it. Now let's fly.
Fly, you fools.
All right. What did we, we can start if you want to with the turbo lift.
The massive shaft, turbo the lift? Thing? Okay, so when you see Discovery from the side, it's pretty low profile. Mm. Yet they're flying around and someone gets booted out of the turbo lift and,
I think the problem here was, now it's interesting that this is a different view of the turbo lift space than we used to have. If you remember what we used to see in the first two seasons were a bunch of rails everywhere, yep. Like a giant
pinball machine.
Yeah. Now it's creating virtual things
virtual
for it to
rails.
Go through. It's just flying through space from one place to another.
I'm willing to count that towards the upgrades. Okay. It's 900 years later. We don't know how many things they did to the ship. You mentioned cloaking device. So, yep. Okay. You know, they got the detached nacelles. Okay. Mm-hmm. We got a few new things, but they didn't change the physical dimensions inside the ship.
Well, clearly they did, because the scene that we skipped over where Burnham and Osira battle in the data core, which is the size of the bridge.
Yeah, right.
Which obviously was the bridge set. I mean, a lot of the sets are the bridge set because they're always round rooms. They just keep redressing the bridge.
They filmed them in the Oval Office of the White House.
Yeah, I think that size is an ongoing problem.
Yeah, I was seriously getting, you know, TARDIS feels, you know, bigger on the inside kind of thing, because they were fighting on that turbo lift and it just kept going and going, moving around. And then not only that, when they ejected the warp core, that tube, you know, that the where it ejects from, it was just like, it went on forever. I bet it took 5 minutes for the warp core to fall out of this.
I mean,
you'd
I don't
think
know
that they'd have that on rails, but no, it's banging around inside there.
Because what could go wrong if the warp core decides to blow up on while you're
it gets
still
jammed
the
halfway down like a bad vending machine?
Stink.
Like, you got to shake the tube.
Somebody got an ensign down there with it, just kicking it with his foot.
Put another quarter in it. I don't know. On the subtlety scale, when they showed the .23s and they said, "Are you the sphere?" Did you notice that the eyes of one were yellow, the other one was blue, and the other one was red? I thought, yep. Oh, they got the nice one of each department, I guess.
They did their best to give a Vulcan salute, even though they only have, I think, 3 digits.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, I thought you meant I was thinking the Vulcan hello.
No, that would be bad. Also, they weren't being sarcastic. They were straight up, not on the side. So
I was heartwarmed to see Kenneth Mitchell in these episodes.
Yes. Yes.
That was
absolutely
awesome.
I thought that was I thought he did a great job. I thought that there were, you know, just slight touches in his speech about how he was rescued by Osira, just, you know, about how I really shouldn't be here type of thing. I thought that, you know, they just had that hint of those, you know, real world things and then moved on to other stuff. And I thought that was great.
Yeah.
I still am trying to process how I feel about Sukal
causing the burn.
Well, not only just not only the burn is its own issue, but the character itself, who seems to be an adolescent,
immature,
kind of striving to be a lot of different things at the same time, you know, conscious of everything that's going on, but whether everything he knows is happening, he's repressing somehow. I thought that the actor did a good job. An actor who, by the way, whose name is escaping me, but if your children watched Sesame Street, he was the second actor who played Mr. Noodle on Sesame Street.
Okay.
Oh, really?
I thought that they did a really good job. Now, call me weird, but when they showed the hologram of the child Sukal,
mm-hmm.
looked a lot like the adult Sukal. I mean, you could tell there were facial differences between Saru and Sukal. So you go, okay, these are two different actors, two different people. They made the child look a lot like the adult. It was like you could almost see this face could turn into that. This face could turn into that face.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so since
Bill Irwin, by the way, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Yep. That's fine. Yeah. And when I looked it up, I recognize that person. He was, and sure enough, there's in his credits there that he was Mr. Noodle. Since we're on Sukal, what is your feeling about him being the source of the burn?
I thought that was a little thin, but we don't know. Like I said, we don't know what his entanglement was to dilithium and the planet. So I'm trying to think if we've ever seen something like that before, where a being was in tune with their environment to be able to affect their environment like that.
Well, he was born there, and he had been living there for a long time. Well, I'll take that back. He was still a child when that happened, because he was born. Of course, he was obviously old enough to remember it and react to it. So I imagine, what was he, probably 8 to 10 or so-ish?
We don't know how Kelpians age. So.
Yeah, I don't know, because obviously they can live to be 125 years old or so.
I thought it was okay. Maybe I was looking for more of a natural reason for the burn to happen rather than somebody causing it. Not to his own fault. He didn't do it intentionally, but so he wasn't like a villain or something.
Right. I was commenting to someone that some people seem disappointed in it because of what it was. And I said, well, keep in mind that we also were thinking about this like a standard mystery, or the, since Alex Kurtzman is the school of the J.J. Abrams mystery box, that this was a mystery that we were getting the specific clues to, and we were supposed to be figuring out the same time as the crew was. Mm-hmm. And so naturally people are jumping online about, oh, well, this must be how it ties in with Calypso because of this and that, and this must mean X, Y, and Z. And I'm thinking, well, no, that could just be clues that the crew is finding that eventually lead them to where they need to go to have this thing happen. And the fact that there was no big bad, which I think is one of the reasons why Osira is in this story, so there actually is a big bad in here to battle. Mm-hmm. That sometimes stuff just happens. Like, there was no great, you know, reason behind it per se. There was no great, you know, plan or you mm-hmm. know, an alien invasion or something. Stuff just happened.
Yeah.
But I was also wondering, all right, he's left the planet. He's gone back to Kaminar with Saru. I mean, if he gets upset on Kaminar, is that going to be okay?
I don't think it'll be a problem, because once they took him out of there, he's not connected to the dilithium planet. I think the dilithium acted as his amplifier.
Yeah, because he was sitting right on a big pile of it. You know, so, yeah. And because they kept mentioning that it had a subspace component to it.
Yes. That's how it got throughout space so quickly.
How do we feel about Book now having the ability to use the spore drive?
Finally, some redundant systems.
Exactly. Which they've been hinting at all season long that they wanted. Right. They kept trying to, we have to protect Stamets because he's the only one who can do this board drive. And we need to, you know, until he was trying to figure out some way to make something happen. And here comes Aurelio, who says, hey, this guy can do it. He's been like right here all along. What are you talking about? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting turn because, you know, they, of course, told us early on that Book could, you know, Dr. Doolittle with the animals kind of thing. So as soon as he mentioned it about this guy can possibly run their spore drive, I was like, oh, well, yeah, of course he could. You know, it kind of makes sense, or at least it made enough sense where I was down with it.
And we see, I don't remember the character name. I'm just going to call him David Cronenberg all the time anyway. Yeah. He shows up at the end and he's looking out the window when all the ships in dock, if you will, are shooting at the Discovery. But I can't figure out why he's there. I can't figure out, he doesn't have any specific input into how to solve the problem or great insight into what's going on. Someone has floated the idea, for better or for worse, that they think that he is the president of the Federation.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he was a spy.
Because, I mean, we don't see the president of the Federation negotiating with Osira. It's Vance who's doing it.
Right.
And maybe he's off someplace, you know, watching what's going on. I mean, I don't know. I think we're led to believe that he's somehow involved with a variant of Section 31, but that might be a misdirect. We don't really know what his deal is. So did you, we noticed he was there. Were you expecting, I was expecting him to have some sort of insightful, this is what's happening, or they need to do this and they need to do that. It's just kind of, hey, you know, they could get destroyed out there. Oh yeah. Hey,
Just at the window enjoying the light show.
Yes. Well, I had a feeling he was probably the president because, wouldn't you think if there was something big like that going on, the president would have been involved hanging out anyway, which we didn't see anybody. You know, it looked like it was important, like it was part of the conversation, except for him and Vance.
Right. I don't think any of the civilians were there on the, assuming he is a civilian, were on the one. And we're speaking about the attack on the Discovery inside space dock, for lack of a better term. Aren't there a lot of ships in there and Discovery is able to fend them all off?
That's just how awesome Osira is.
Ah, okay. All right. I stand corrected awesome on that one.
Osira kind of rhymes a little bit.
It was like putting Batman on the bridge.
That explains. Oh, I see. Gotcha. Right. I thought it was an episode of Twilight. No. That's a different thing altogether. Oh, okay. Any other observations about?
Oh, I do have something else.
Yeah.
I meant to bring this up when I was talking about the comics that they found in the comics. They found enough dilithium. And I remember the comment in the comic was, well, that's enough dilithium that could run the Starfleet for 50 years. I was like, forget the planet. We don't need that anymore.
Well, funny thing about all that dilithium though, yeah, it all broke. So right. Yeah, now Discovery's job is to shuttle dilithium to planets.
Yeah. Now it's like
on a pizza
drama where they're the Planet Express where they're just making deliveries.
You get you that lithium in 30 minutes or it's free.
Who's this big silver robot on the bridge and this guy with the orange hair?
Mother Bud Zoidberg.
Yeah, we don't talk about him.
And I think we definitely see foreshadowing that we will be seeing Gray Tall visible to the entire crew somehow in season 4.
No, I think we all know how.
Through the holodeck.
Yeah, much like the doctor did with
us. So we're going to have
portable holo emitter on him?
Holo emitter, yeah.
I mean, think about it. The holo emitter was future tech for Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
but it wasn't like, was it, it wasn't 1,000 years in the future. So they're way past that technology. So it should be around.
But the doctor was, artifact isn't the right word, but he's an outcome of the computer. He was part of the computer. So the computer just had to project him.
Right.
Gray is more ethereal than that. How would the holodeck know where he was?
Maybe they can use programmable matter in the ship instead of, instead of just holo emitters.
Well, the however advanced it was, clearly the holographic elements on the Keyeth were able to recognize it and give it form. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
That's true. And theoretically, everybody else is 100 years more advanced than that.
Right. That's true. That's true.
So it probably just has to find, hey, there's an ethereal energy pattern over there. Let's manifest it. Oh, no, it's just smoke from the microwave. Someone burnt their popcorn again.
It's that burrito-ate.
I saw something swimming by. Somebody was cooking some fish in the microwave, weren't they? Come on, fess up.
Every bit of photonic energy. Like, there's one. Oh, stop.
Great. You're going to have a tapeworm, and you're going to get transported, and there's going to be, the holodeck, and there's going to be two of them. A worm and a... Yeah. Wait, put it back.
So I'm going to lead directly from here into our warp speed roundtable because we're kind of getting into what would happen in the next season. So let me ask directly as our warp speed roundtable question, what do you hope will happen in the next season of Discovery? And that can also spill over into what do you think is going to happen?
This is sounding like our predictions from a couple of weeks ago. I think
it is indeed.
They're going to jump. Okay.
Yes, but who's going to be doing it? And will Stamets be talking to the captain?
He has to now. She's the captain. He's out of a job because she's got Book as a backup.
That's right. There's a backup, so he's got to get doing sciencey things again.
I think there's going to be a conf. Wait a minute. What are we starting to discuss now?
Yeah, whether things you expect are going to happen or whether it's something you specifically would like to happen.
Get back to work, Mr. Cranky Pants.
Yeah, I think that we're going to see Discovery guarantee same day deliveries.
Stamets and Reno are going to have a romantic episode.
They're going to.
I don't think so, Tim.
For all the ships in Starfleet, for $100 a year, they get next day delivery.
Oh, I see how that works.
Amazon.
Well, I'm hoping that we have less overarching story next season and more standalone.
I'm glad you brought that up because I think that was what this season was for, was to make that transition to go from long overarching to individual episodes. Cause as we've talked about it before, I mean, I like Discovery, but I like being able to pop into a TNG episode and just watch an episode and not necessarily have a cliffhanger and go to the next episode. So I hope that they do that. I know they mentioned that they're doing that with Strange New Worlds. So yeah, I hope they kind of break it up a little bit, one or two show, three, maybe, story arcs, that's one thing, but you only have what we have 13 episodes.
Mm-hmm. We have 13. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't have time to do that, to maybe do some different episodes.
And I was hearing that as everything goes in cycles in entertainment, that now the audience is shifting more towards they're interested in having, the episodic type of things rather than the season long arcs.
You can still have a longer arc. I mean, Donna and I are watching Hawaii 5-0. I think we're on about season 3, which is 2012 or 2013. And they've got this thread going through about the bad guys here and someone shows up there, but they're still episodic shows to solve. I mean, they get the crime done in an hour, but we've got this new clue about your mom or whoa fat or whatever. So, I mean, they could string through what they've seen from the Emerald Chain and have clues and move that story along separate from Crisis of the Week or Alien of the Week. There's that element. You could do it either way, really. I mean, let's go visit Burnham's mom again. And there's, I would agree. I think we need to dial it back a little bit on here's a piece of this 13-piece puzzle and nothing else. We're just trying to figure out what the burn was all about.
Right. Right.
And we did that, by and large, we did that in season one. We did that with the sphere in season two. You know, what was the Red Angel all about? Who is it? Where is it? And like, okay, we've played that game three times now. I'm hoping they can get a little more episodic. Not completely, but more.
Yeah. And I'm hoping, I'm almost assured that it will happen, but I'm certainly hoping that Saru is going to be back.
I'm sure he will be.
But the question is, in what capacity?
Nursemaid.
Did you notice that Sukal, when he walked, he also had the wavy hand thing going on?
Yes.
Yeah.
And yes. When he ran, he had the fast wavy hand thing.
Yep. Yeah, when he ran away from Burnham, I noticed it especially because of that long shot and just see the hands. Whoop, 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 whoop.
Yeah. He went to the school of Saru to learn how to do that.
I'm going to guess, you know, Doug Jones had to invent a lot of that character. And then as they had the other actors playing Kelpians, there was some coaching and training going on about this is the way you should behave. Maybe he was directed some, but I'll bet he injected a lot of character into that character that the others had to pick up on.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think he's talked about the fact that he's had to, you know, that he worked with the other actors who were doing Kelpians about, you know, because now he's the expert. Well, this is what you do and this is what you don't do.
Yeah.
As a Kelpian.
Don't pick your nose.
Well, and I also,
go ahead, Clint.
Well, I was going to say, I also want to make sure I don't need to see him all the time, but I really want to have Vance, Admiral Vance, back for next season. You know, I think that's the touch point back to Starfleet.
I think he would did a great job. You know, playing Admiral Vance. I think he was great. So, and yeah, I'd love to see him as well.
He can read a contract.
That's right. There you go. Get back to us now. Give us a report on what that's like.
I'm not installing this app.
Yeah. And I don't know. I don't know what to make about his head of security, Willa, because we really didn't get a chance to see her do very much. I don't have a strong enough opinion. I really thought that she was going to end up on Discovery at some point, at least for a part of the season, to keep an eye on them. You know, at Vance's insistence because he didn't trust them, but she just stayed there at headquarters.
Who is in charge of security on Discovery, by the way?
Yeah, since we had.
Because they failed. The ship got taken over pretty easy.
Well,
was it Worf?
I mean, come on. That happens once a week. So I'm surprised it took that long for it to happen.
And Osira didn't download the memory banks.
Right, because your head of security has gone off to be on the seed ship. I don't remember who
that was. Your head of security. I don't know who's running it now.
I don't remember whether they specified.
Oh yeah, it was Commander Nahn, wasn't it?
Yeah, and so I don't.
So that would have been a logical. Hey, here's Willa. Here's a job for you. Shape this crew up, or protect them, or whatever it is.
If you go pull up, if I search for a Star Trek Discovery head of security. Commander Nahn. I was looking to see if it had said something more different, but
it can't be Shax.
That's,
he died.
That's wrong because she's no longer there. Right. So that is incorrect.
Yeah, I'll go edit Wikipedia.
Maybe
that always works out well. You go ahead. Maybe you do that.
Maybe it'll be Book. Who knows?
Well, Book is not even
technically Starfleet yet.
Well, they can make anyone Starfleet if they really want to.
And I got to call you out, Chuck.
What?
You remember I said, I was talking about Book and you said, oh, don't you see? He's the bad guy. You thought he was the bad guy this year.
I still have my suspicions about the man.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yes, I do. I don't think we're done with that story.
Hmm. Oh, okay. All right.
Well, we didn't get it. We didn't get our story about Cleveland Booker that we were promised.
We got a mention.
Well, we got the mention that he said he took that name from, I believe he said, his mentor. And he said, and I'll tell you about it when I get back. And then he's back and we don't get the story.
Oh, they were busy.
Yeah, they had this Osara thing going on.
Pew, 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 pew. Oh, now, how about now for a story?
No, no. When she's walking to take, you know, her place in the captain's chair and she's going by, he should just stop her and say, oh, remember I promised you that story? I'm going to tell you that story now before you go sit in the captain's chair.
How about you just tell everybody here in the room?
You know, I'm going to take you up on that.
Share with everybody.
All righty. Well,
I think one of the other points we're going to see, obviously, is Stamets doing the side eye to Burnham. He's not thrilled with her because she ejected him.
And it's really weird because she should be able to say, yeah, well, when you tried to do something, when you went to Admiral Vance, how did that work out? He did exactly the same thing. He took you and put you on a shuttle to get you out of here.
Get you even further away.
And sometimes when you're the captain, you have to make hard decisions even before you get to be the captain.
That's right. Well, I'm looking for, the other thing I want to see more in Discovery is I want a closer look at some of these other ships.
Yes.
You know, I've only seen
the Voyager J
concept art, huh?
The Voyager J.
That, among other things, the Nog. I'd like to see somebody get on the Nog, you know. I don't know, just what these other ships look like, for crying out loud. Yeah, right. How big are they on the inside?
Yeah, exactly. Let's see your turbo shafts. Come on.
So what's the next Star Trek show coming up that we got to look forward to? Is it season 3 of Picard? Nothing, is it section
nothing two? Has a specific date to it. So my guess
later this
guess,
year.
My guess is that it's going to be Prodigy. Because that's the one that was has not done its first season and it was in production. So well, I think the first two that would probably be out the gate, since they're already done all or most of the scripts for Lower Decks, and Lower Decks can start doing things full force as well. That it might
Picard
be the two animated series
filming soon. Like
Picard starts in February and Discovery is filming now, but I mean, we've seen how long the lead time is on Discovery, you know, especially given all the posts that they do on it. You know, they finished filming, and so we're talking about still working remotely on stuff. I think they ended the filming the very beginning of the year. It was close to a year's worth of post on Discovery. So that's my best guess. I know that they're also about to do Strange New Worlds, but I think it's going to be the same as all the other live actions ones, that you're going to film and then you have lots and lots of posts to do on them. That's my guess. They have not announced any specific dates.
Okay. So it's up in the air.
Haven't heard anything about Section 31 yet.
Nope. Or Pike. No.
They planned out Star Trek to 2027, but we don't even know about this year.
Well, I think the problem was that, if I recall, when they made those plans out for the future, we were in a different world at that point. And so those plans probably got adjusted after that.
Oh, sure.
So the three of us need to go back to the archive vault and find some shows or movies or whatever.
Yes, we'll be discussing things. We will have some guests coming up, so stay tuned.
Wait, we need to finish up our animated series.
As I'm going to point out, the first thing we do is we go back and we finish up the animated series.
Where did we leave off?
Exactly. Thank you.
Are we going to start over?
No. We're just doing season 2, which mercifully is much shorter than season 1.
We'll find out where we left off and we'll continue.
So, I remember this pain, but this one, not so much. This must be where we started. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's about time to refill the dilithium chamber and get on out of here. So
now that we have a whole planet's worth.
That's right. Yay. We don't have to be secret about it anymore. As soon as the Discovery gets here with our supply, of course. Leveled up. You can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast, all one word, with the number 4.com. You can also find me on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and MeWe and that shirt you haven't washed and you're not sure you're going to keep or put in for, you know, somebody else to have, you can find me there as well. And who speaks for you guys?
Go ahead, Chuck.
You can find us at Technorama Podcast in your favorite search engine. Just look for Technorama Podcast. Or if you go to chuckchat.com, click the Technorama link. It's just that easy. You can find, I also do Podcasting for Dummies with T. Morris. We've got a number of episodes going out at podcastingfordummies.com season 4. Okay, somebody just texted me, and that was the same tone, like Mario coin.
I was like, wow, he's really a...
I didn't even, you know, hey, look, kids, no hands. So, yeah, Podcasting for Dummies is in its 4th season. You can find episodes over at podcastingfordummies.com. I'll leave the work properties out of it for now, but there's a whole bunch more that we do during our day jobs.
By the way, in Podcasting for Dummies, there's a note, be sure to silence phone when doing live show. But anyway...
Who wrote that, Chuck?
Unless it has the same sound effect as in your show, then it's okay.
Oh, yeah.
The exceptions right. To every rule.
All right. It's time to hit the theme, boys. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek, don't put on
the red
shirt. Well, this dilithium took longer than 30 minutes to get. I'm not paying for this.